So, yeah, I just want to say a little bit about what I'm planning to offer here first, or just some kind of, I don't know, guidelines. And the first one is to say that I will not be teaching soul making Dharma in its fullness at all in this group. Certainly, Rob's approaches to imaginal practice were the basis for that direction. But it in and of itself is its own kind of paradigm that he and Catherine developed. And if you are interested in learning that, I think the best and the only place right now is to enter into that is a course she offers every year at the Barry Buddhist Studies Institute, something like that. But anyway, I'm sure many of you are familiar with this course. Maybe some of you have taken it. So that's just to make that sort of distinction between these ideas and the way we'll be exploring, and maybe the way I kind of look at it is, you know, these imaginal ideas came into Rob's work, and then part of the evolution of them is coming into a more fuller kind of, I don't know if I want to say codified paradigm, but one that has kind of a range of elements that are very distinct and very fleshed out. Whereas for me, I'm practicing with the imaginal, practicing with images, touching into this side of things. It can be found in different traditions and different threads of teaching. I think that there is for me something very profound and beautiful about the way that Rob put it into like a kind of meditative form and a meditative context. For me, I'm profoundly grateful for that. But I kind of want to make that distinction. And also partially that's because I have my own relationship of working with images that's a little distinct. I am an artist. I've been an artist my whole life. And then maybe for the decade before I found Rob's teachings, I had been doing a kind of, I would say, I'd call it like an imaginally oriented painting practice where really it's like opening up this relationship to imagination, creativity, this kind of, this other, yeah, this other way beyond our control to relate to our own imagination. So I have that kind of history, and that kind of informs how I think about these things and teach it. I'm going to be heavily basing almost all of what I say on Rob's teachings, and then if you were able to see the resources, they're basically a bunch of Rob's talks. But I just want to be clear about that. And I'm certainly going to just be. What I think I'm going to offer in this group, in this class, is really specifically around how to find your own way to practice with images on the cushion and in your life. I think there's ways that we can just sort of start, you know, to open and touch this and maybe to say, you know, when I started doing this kind of relating to images within the context of the practice was basically what you're not supposed to do. You know, it's like how to stop blocking the relationship to the this kind of flowing, vivid, dimensional mystery that, you know, place where images, however you want to hold that. You know, so it's like stop trying to control it, stop trying to make everything beautiful, stop. You know, it's just very simple instructions. And Rob's approach is actually it's like a very expanded kind of a lot of teachings that's very, very kind of dense and very kind of beautiful. So I think both kinds of approaches have their merit, but I'll probably be doing something closer to the other one here, which I hope will be helpful. One of the things I find in teaching around Rob's ideas is that I think there is a place for kind of coming into them from a different perspective. You know, especially because the way that he teaches, the way he teaches, I don't think anyone can do it better than him anyway. Yeah. And it's all there. It's all in the recording. I am going to approach what I offer here. I have in my notes. Yeah, Rob lays out 28 aspects of the imaginal in the Towards the Imaginal talk in the Foundations of Soulmaking Dharma. So if you do want a really full, like, what are all these aspects of an image? That's I think one of the fuller places to go. He reads a list. I have a link to, I think it's the, it's maybe Aspects of the Imaginal 1 and 2 on my page. I think I do. So that's another place for a fuller list. So in what I'm going to offer here, we're going to go with the idea of axioms or practice instructions for how I'm going to present the idea of the imaginal and what I call the rules of the imaginal. But maybe another way to say it is kind of skillful ways to hold the idea of an image to elicit certain results. So I'm using that kind of, there's a definition for what an axiom is that's related to logic and mathematics. That is a proposition that is assumed without proof for the sake of studying the consequences that follow from it. So I'm not going to be defining where images come from or what the imaginal realm is or the ontology of that. You'll find a range of ways that's described in different practice traditions. So I'm not going to do that. So it's like you're into it or you're not into it, and we're going to do it on the second week of the month, and you can, you know. So that's kind of how I'm going. In a way, that's that way of working is kind of central to how a meditator, I think, best works. And this is a quote from Rob that I just found. Practice is not practice as far as I'm concerned unless it affects perception. So a meditator is someone who plays with different ways of looking, relationships, conceptions in ways that affect perception. So we say, what is this conceptual framework? What if this one? And we sort of put it in and take it for a ride and see what happens. So philosophies and conceptual frameworks become more like doors. So that's very much the spirit. I'm going to be offering on the notes page. I started listing axioms, which are just these kinds of like run with this and see what comes from it versus like this is, you know, images are from the unconscious or images are from this realm or you know, like just not even going to sort of go there in this discussion. Staying very results oriented. That sounds terrible, but sort of. And probably not going to be spending a lot of time up in the relationship between like imaginal practice and Buddhism or sort of trying clarifying it or justifying it. We're going to kind of just hold it as its own kind of exploration. Though Rob does that in certain talks, yeah. And particularly, I think the ones on like mythos, image, dharma may have a little of that. Don't quote me on that, but that is something that he covers. Probably we will talk about the relationship between emptiness practice and imaginal practice. But that's not really a justification per se, in my opinion. Alrighty. So those are all my apologies. But no, I mean just to kind of clarify the direction that I think would be helpful and fun to go in. So I'm going to offer a little bit of teaching then, and then we can open it up. For whatever reason, I felt like bringing up this possibility of considering imaginal practice or looking at it in terms of being a mystical endeavor, a mystical practice. It's how I look at it. I'm going to define how I define mystical practice or a mystical endeavor to clarify it. Because it actually simplifies the whole thing for me. There's something about how kind of like rich and aesthetically dense and kind of evocative the imaginal and soul-making teachings are. It's almost, I want to find ways to kind of like parse and enter into it. And for me, it's like just looking at this as a mystical practice is helpful. This is the dictionary definition: having a spiritual meaning or reality that is neither apparent to the senses nor obvious to the intelligence. So for me, that's a big part of like the kind of how to approach this for myself. Yeah, and I'll expand on that. This is a quote from Ken MacLeod, who is a, I guess he's a Vajrayana Buddhist teacher. The stuff I like from him is the way he talks about Buddhism as a mystical endeavor. I find it quite nice and quite helpful. I think there was the whatever the last exchange between him and Michael Taft on Michael Taft's podcast, I quite like the Dharma of it. Just This is not from there, but this is his quote. So one thing, no, excuse me, my view of mysticism is that the interest or pers is that my view of mysticism is that it's the interest or the pursuit of a way of experiencing life that does not depend on the conceptual mind. In Christianity, one talks about the direct experience of God. That's probably the most important quality of what we call mystical experience or mystical knowledge. There's no intermediary, it's very direct. Okay, so I find all of that with imaginal practice. Now I'm going to read a quote from Rob from an old talk of his on mystical experience. So, one thing that mystical experiences have in common is the sense of making things holy. The second thing they have in common is that they bring about or they are changes in perception and understanding of reality, you could say, of what's real. Those changes in perception and understanding, they call into question conventional, taken for granted perceptions and appearances and understandings. And they also have in common that there's a sense of less solidity to the self, less reality to the self, less separateness, more freedom, and more love. So some good things that come from mystical experience, and I would say from mystical practice, mystical endeavors. And again, this kind of this relationship between, like what is beyond the conceptual mind, or maybe like I might say it's more like what is obscured by it, what's hidden by it. That sort of way of thinking about imaginal practice is helpful for me versus like it's this, there's this place, this thing, and somehow I got to figure out how to get there. Because I would argue with imaginal practice, there's an awful lot of ways you already work that way, navigate that way, or touch that way, open that way. And so it's sort of like the practice is like in two parts, or you can look at it that way. One part is not doing what one usually does, like the conventional, the conceptual mind, as MacLeod says, or the, the humdrum comparing, judging, reasoning, orienting everything to the self, like clinging, craving mind, that mind, seeing how in the realm of relating to images, that mind is blocking stuff. So that's like one half of the practice is that side of it. And then the other half is something like connecting and reconnecting or recollecting what is kind of what is hidden, but also what sort of seeps through and is just isn't privileged or prioritized. That we know, that exists in this imaginal way, this imaginal realm. This is kind of like a, it's like a, it was actually a huge thing for me. It wasn't a small thing, but it was like for me, I had this thing where it's like this stuff lived in art. It was in this art box, and that's where I knew it. And it was like, it's almost like it was tied to certain materials, and I could only kind of open it to it through the paint or, see it in someone else's art or here. And quite beautifully and spectacularly, that was just a kind of idea that when kind of seen through, it's like things could open in ways that were not limited to a specific substrate. So that's just one specific example, from me and my practice. There's like many ways where it's like this aspect of our experience, or however you want to look at it, is kind of subjugated and hidden and masked. And so in practice, it's like we're touching the ways we already know it and giving it more of a place at the table and learning to cultivate that connection and open it and the subtleties and the beauty there. And then the other half is like seeing how we're always trying to like take everything beautiful and like chop it up and make it into a product that says something about who we are and how great we are, whatever. So like those are the two parts. Those kind of two parts you could kind of put up, I would argue, in different ways with kind of any mystical kind of practice. I would probably put any spiritual practice and meditation into that box. I'd like find the way to do it. But anyway, so looking at that here with the imaginal practice. Yeah, so I have, let's see how much time I have. I'll talk a little bit more. Unlike the exploration I could say in Rob's book, in Seeing That Freeze, this exploration of of how experience is fabricated and moving towards less and less unfabrication, less and less fabrication towards the unfabricated, you know, which for me, this kind of fits in with, I can at least put it in the same room with certain other descriptions of what mystical practice is. You know, it's like moving towards union with the Godhead or the, you know, that's another discussion for another day. But that kind of mystical practice is really about, on one hand, it's like you have to learn to relate to experience in a wholly different way through actively sort of setting down the way you habitually navigate. It's kind of a tall order in some ways. I would argue with for imaginal practice, it's almost like that, this sort of, it's almost like it's running on a different track. And I'm not going to try to prove that at all, but I'm just going to say that it's like this stuff is there. We know it. We touch it. It comes into our beings. I don't know if this is a direct relationship, but what comes to mind for me is that when I'm painting, I can listen to Dharma talks or things that have a lot to do with like words and thinking, and it's fine. And I just like I have this if I try to write and do listen to somebody talking, it's completely impossible. There's some like what it is that senses the imaginal for me, it's like yeah, it's sort of operating on a separate track, and in a way that for me it makes kind of opening this as a mystical practice. There's a little bit of an intuitiveness, I think, for almost everyone. I would say everyone, or at least everyone who's able to appreciate something about art or something about nature or touch a sense of sacredness. It's really about kind of like opening that up and expanding it. Yeah, art, music, relating to life in poetic ways. You know, if you've had those moments in your life where you are just struck, you're just struck, you are touched. Who knows, you know, what all the factors are, but it's who's there, you know, it's the color of the light, the feeling, you know, it's just like something opens up and there's a poetic quality to the lived experience, you know, it's that. So in a way you could say like imaginal practice is learning to cultivate that and make it reliable, you know, and make it yeah. Just a real part of how you live your life in a way. It kind of moves in that direction. But it's not discovering something you don't know. I guess that's the important thing. I think it's very helpful to look at it that way. The practice can be viewed not so much as finding this imaginal thing, but sort of like stopping the hiding, you know, and privileging that aspect of experience. This is a quote from James Hillman, who Rob refers to often in imaginal and soul-making teachings. The mind is in the imagination rather than the imagination in the mind, which maybe relates a little bit to what I'm just saying, sort of a different way of looking at it. But it's, yeah, we're not waiting for this thing to spring from the thinking mind, the conceptual mind, the judging mind. We're like just trying to find ways to like quiet that down and scoot it over a little bit so something else can open up. All right, maybe I'll just talk a little bit about a couple things from the practice instructions that I offered. Just a couple. Just at the beginning where I was kind of like offering helpful suggestions on aspects of images that might be helpful. Oh, and actually, I think I sort of cut this one out. Images are inexhaustible, irreducible. They don't have one simple meaning, one literal meaning. Not flat. We could say poetic, not literal. So they have that quality. There's some quote that Rob uses. I think it's Ezra Pound describing an image like a kind of vortex, you know, through which ideas are constantly rushing in and out. Like there's something about that. They're alive. They're this inexhaustible. There's kind of always something that can open from them. They're iconic. Yeah. So it's like within the practice in terms of this idea that I just kind of opened up about like stopping doing the stuff that's blocking and then the privileging part of what I think becomes part of this way of practicing is becoming sensitive to when the mind is sort of seizing things and flattening them and literalizing them or wanting to take them and do something with them. When I teach with artists, like that's a big thing. I'm not trying to say it's bad at all to use this side of our experience to make art with. I've done it for years, okay? But I'm saying this is different, yeah? And being really sensitive to those energies that want to, you know, or even that's like, wow, this image is so weird and so cool. I can't wait to tell someone about it. You know, it's like this, you see this kind of movement of the mind that's kind of coming in and wanting to make a product of something. So being sensitive to that, I think, is really helpful. Yeah, sort of taking the image and trying to own it. This is a quote from Henri Corbin, another person that Rob refers to often, a scholar, a mystic, a philosopher who studied Islamic mystics and a lot about this kind of imaginal realm. And in fact, he apparently coined the term imaginal as it's used in this way. I love this quote. One does not penetrate into the angelic world by housebreaking. One does not move around mentally in the imaginal realm by the assistance of a formal logic or a dialectic which leads from one concept to the next by deduction. So the part for me is like one does not penetrate into the angelic world by housebreaking. Like that is just, it sums up really something about this kind of work and this kind of practice. It's like you don't go in there and try to like chop it up and use it for your own anything. It will close off. It will flatten right out right away. The dimensionality, the portals, the vortexes, they'll just kind of close. So learning to be sensitive to that. So it's a really helpful. Could talk about the relationship between, I won't, okay. But anyway, it's like all these interrelationships between the different areas of practice are really fascinating to me. It's sort of like, how does your insight practice like come in here? Yeah, like it does to me. It all kind of connects. All right. And again, just to emphasize this, knowing in at least partially or trying to know an image, to recognize an image as an image through the energy body and or the body sensitivity or the however the non-neck up kind of thing, so important, because that is another, you know, on one hand it's like being sensitive to where the mind is just trying to co-opt everything and close the portals and the vortexes, but on the other hand it's like let the body and the energy body tell you what is really alive, what is really open, what is really how to enter into a more mysterious relationship with your experience. Let that happen. And that for me is one of a lot of the things that I encountered in terms of re relating to images, I'd already found in different ways. But this emphasis on the energy body backed up with a practice of learning to cultivate sensitivity to the energy body is something that Rob, you know, that I got from Rob and Rob brought to the table. And I think for exploring this stuff in a contemplative way, it's really important, an important contribution, that way of combining things. Yeah, I think I've said enough. I had a little more, but let's stop there and then open it up and then